Yesterday, we started a conversation with Michio Kaku, a world-renowned theoretical physicist, futurist, and author. He talked about what he thinks is next for human space travel and the significance of gravitational waves. We're now able to look at the universe with something besides light, which may help us understand dark matter and dark energy. That's where we pick up our conversation with Michio Kaku. I asked him what we can learn about those concepts and why it will help us.
Well, every high school textbook is now being revised because every high school textbook says that the universe is mainly made out of atoms. That's wrong. We now realize that most of the universe is made out of dark matter, which surrounds the galaxy, holds it together. If it wasn't for dark matter, we wouldn't be here today to talk about it. But it's invisible. And we have to look for matter that is invisible but has gravitational pull to hold the galaxy together. The leading theory is that dark matter is nothing but a higher octave of the string. Now, string theory says that our universe today is the lowest vibration of tiny little vibrating strings. And so the laws of physics is nothing but the laws of harmony of all these little tiny vibrating strings. Chemistry would be the melodies you can play on these strings. The universe would be a symphony of these strings. And we think that there's higher octaves. So dark matter could be the next octave to the string. The next octave beyond the photon, which is a particle of light, is the photino. And the photino is the leading candidate for dark matter. We think it's a new subatomic particle, and it's a subatomic particle predicted by string theory. And we hope to create it with the Large Hadron Collider. We hope to produce it with the next generation of experiments in outside Geneva, Switzerland, to search for dark matter particles. And there's a Nobel Prize waiting for the team that snags this particle that could give us dark matter.
While we have you, let me just ask you a few quick questions here. One is, when do you think we're going to know if there is alien life?
Well, I'm going to stick my neck out and say that I think in this century, we probably will pick up emissions from some advanced civilization in outer space. Right now, we're simply scanning some of the stars out there. We've located 4,000 stars with planets going around them. We now believe that on average, every single star in the galaxy has a planet going around them on average. Meaning that our own backyard, there are tens of billions of planets, many of them Earth-like, and the probability of finding radio signals from one of them, I think, is quite high. Now, of course, for them to meet us would be very difficult. Once we pick up their radio signals, we cannot talk to them because radio would take maybe hundreds of years to go back to the home planet. So a conversation in real time would probably not be possible. But I think that, yeah, I think that perhaps in this century we'll pick up some signal from an intelligent civilization in space. And that could be one of the great turning points in our own history, making contact with another civilization in space.
Are you concerned about artificial intelligence?
Well, yes and no. Of course, we have this debate between Mark Zuckerberg, who says, don't worry, artificial intelligence will create jobs and prosperity. And then we have Elon Musk, who says, let's not be naive. One of these days, they'll take over, perhaps, an existential threat to humanity. Personally, I think that both of them are partially right. In the short term, that is, over the next many decades, I think Zuckerberg is right. That artificial intelligence will create jobs, new opportunities, economic prosperity. But in the long term now, perhaps by the end of this century, robots may become self-aware. Now, robots today are adding machines. We forget that. They're not self-aware at all. They don't even know that they are robots. But it's only a matter of time before they become as intelligent as a dog and as intelligent as a monkey. And monkeys are self-aware. They know they're not humans. And at that point, they are potentially dangerous. And at that point, I think we should put a chip in their brain to shut them off if they have murderous thoughts.
Well, they tried that in Westworld, and it didn't work out that well.
Well, yeah, in the next century, in the 22nd century, perhaps we should worry if robots are smart enough to remove the fail-safe system, and so they become self-aware without any checks and balances. I think that's not going to happen in this century. But in the next century, I think we do have to worry about this, quote, existential threat. Now, at that point, and this is way in the future now, I think we should entertain the possibility of merging with them. That is, instead of fighting them off, because inevitably they get smarter every year, right? When's that going to end? Why not simply merge with them and become superhuman ourselves? And already we're beginning to make huge strides by connecting the human brain to a computer. We can already do that now. And in the future, by the way, I believe that the internet in the coming decades will become BrainNet. We'll send emotions and feelings and memories on the internet. And we'll look at the old internet as rather quaint and old-fashioned, like a Model T. Because in the future, teenagers will just simply send emotions on the internet and love it. Teenagers already put happy faces at the end of every sentence, right?
Right.
Teenagers will be able to send the emotions directly on the internet of the future.
One more thing. We've been talking about physics. What do you think about the state of education and science in this country? You're one of the people out there who is very good at, bringing science to life, getting a lot of people who may not be interested in it to listen up and pay attention and maybe inspired to go in and study it themselves. But what do you think we need to do to make sure that we have enough scientists in the future to do all these things you've been talking about?
Well, realize that we're all born scientists. We're born wondering why the sun shines. We're born wondering where we came from until we hit the greatest destroyer of scientists known to science. And that great destroyer of young scientists is junior high school. That's when we lose young scientists by the millions. Think about it. Every day, we probably lost a few more 100,000 young kids because junior high school makes science boring, that it's all memorization. Memorization of silly things that you know you're never going to use again in your life. So we have to change the science curriculum totally and emphasize concepts, principles, and applications of science to your life rather than simply memorizing the laws of pulleys and friction. And so I think that we have to revise our curriculum to make science exciting and relevant for people's lives. And, of course, we had that Sputnik moment back in 1957 when we were jolted by the launch of Sputnik into orbit. I think we may have more Sputnik moments. We're going back to the moon next year with an unmanned mission, and I think that we're going to have more opportunities to thrill young people who may dream about one day going to Mars. And I think we need that because in the future, education is going to be one of the key factors as we digitize society. The jobs are going to be there in the future, but jobs will require more education. And that's why it's very important for the economy and for our competitive advantage over other countries that we reinvigorate science education.
That's Michio Kaku, who is a world-renowned theoretical physicist, futurist, and author. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.